Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
When we make choices to be more healthy and active, we all win. So join me and Cartoon Network, and let's all improve our game. To find out how you can get your school involved with the Let's Move campaign, go to cartoonnetwork.com.
That's what America's come down to, the cartoon first couple appeals to kids on the Cartoon Network, while the Middle East is burning and globalists are earning. Welcome to the Savage Nation. Not one word from the First Lady about the people being machine-gunned to death by Gaddafi. She's telling children to eat carrots on the Cartoon Network. Now you say, well, why do you keep talking? Because it's hypocritical. How much can you take of this? The king has no clothes? It's nightmarish, the country I'm living in. You wanted change? You got change, all right. You got some piece of change, boy. You know, I got to tell you something. We could talk about politics, and we probably will. But I was scanning just before the show, as I often do, for a story that caught my eye. And there's one that caught my eye. It's from a left-wing blog called The Hill. And it says, Matt Drudge defines the debate. And I looked at it. And I want to read this to you, pieces from it. And I'm going to ask you, who is more powerful in defining the conservative movement, Matt Drudge or Rush Limbaugh? Now you say, why are you talking about them? Why didn't you put yourself in there? I'll tell you why. Because Matt Drudge rarely, if ever, mentions anything about Michael Savage, which is okay. I don't care. I consider him a friend, a distant friend. I mean, Congressman West just wrote a letter trying to get my name off the banned list in England. He won't publish it. WorldNet Daily wrote a superb article. He won't publish it. It's okay. He's part of another, cluster group of interest. It's a different group, a different syndication group. And that's understandable. There's fault lines in every movement. And in my opinion, Matt belongs to a different fault line than the one I happen to be in, which is a fault line in which there's nobody but me. But I painted myself in this corner. I'm not complaining about it. So let me read this to you. Matt Drudge defines a debate. And so this guy, Brent something or other, says, the blunt truth is Matt Drudge has probably more influence deciding the political narrative in Washington than any individual in America except President Obama in 08 with his hope of change agenda that has largely disappeared. When I refer to the power of Drudge, I refer to the power to determine and define the political storyline that dominates our national debate. And he talks about the Tea Party movement and is the storyline that rules our debate today. And he says, Drudge has what liberals and Democrats lack, a coherent and consistent narrative about American politics, the ability to drive that narrative through multiple media, and the staying power to drive the narrative year after year relentlessly and successfully. He asks, who is the liberal or Democratic judge? Then he says, there is none, which is a bald-faced lie, of course. This is classic liberalism as a mental disorder. What do you mean there's no Democratic judge? The entire media, you schmuck. It says, even when Democrats controlled the White House and houses of Congress and had a huge fundraising advantage, the idea of creating a competitive Drudge and building their own media networks and lasting narrative never occurred to Democrats. Of course it did. They tried it, but never worked because no one wants to believe it. They listen to the garbage on ABC, CBS, NBC, and all of the other channels. So he says, today there is no Democratic narrative about the urgency of creating jobs. The Tea Party narrative about cutting the deficit has overwhelmed all the topics of debate. That's because we're right, schmuck. And he goes on. It says, the media machine of Drudge and his conservative colleagues grows more powerful by the day. Liberals are under attack, not merely from Drudge and the right, but from some Democrats who perpetually run for cover or distance themselves from or overtly attack their base, which Ronald Reagan and the Kennedys would never do. Nonsense. This guy is a classic jerk. The reason some Democrats are running from Obama is because they're not communists. They're Democrats, you schmuck. He says, I get it, but many Democrats do not, and that is the story of politics in 2011. Deplore what Drudge does, if you will, but give the devil his due. He is light years ahead of any and all Democrats in defining the battle of ideas, and the battle of ideas is what politics and elections are all about. And then there's comments, which I like. And people write, Brent, it sounds like you're a little jealous of Drudge. Drudge is a balance. Your kind doesn't know that concept. Another one says, not surprised you would put up a new liberal talking point. And then it says, the liberals, Democrats control the whole media with a very few exceptions. This gives them the ability to frame the news and set agendas, so they don't need a Drudge to do that. The Drudge Report is a good counterbalance in Democratic discourse. Then they go on. And he says, sorry, Brent, but you're wrong as usual. There is a professional left. You're part of it. And I didn't get that from the Drudge Report. I've only visited the site twice, and I don't get my information there. So I'm asking you, I could ask you who is more powerful, Rush Limbaugh or Matt Drudge, in defining the conservative agenda. I would have thrown my name in there, but I wouldn't do so. To you, I'm probably more influential than Drudge or Limbaugh, if you listen to my show. But in the global picture, it wouldn't be a fair discussion. Drudge is more mainstream. Limbaugh is far more mainstream, less creative than I am. Very stuck-in-the-mud golfer type of guy. Smart guy, but very, very, very predictable. Predictable Republican. Predictable water carrier for the George Bushies. Check pants Republicans need apply only to Limbaugh. And he's found a huge audience, billions of listeners in there, if you combine them over the years. No, it wouldn't be billions, it would be hundreds of millions, I guess. Whatever the number is, 15 million a year times 10, whatever, 200 million people have heard him or something. So I allegedly have 8 to 10 million listeners a week. And he has about 20 or whatever. No one really knows the numbers. Drudge says he has 18 trillion visitors a day. You go on the bottom, visits to Drudge in the past 20, 9 billion. In past year, 9,399,789, blah, blah, blah. What? 9 billion people read the Drudge Report in the last year? 9 billion? There's only 5 billion people on the earth. Oh, visits. That means how many times they refresh the page. 30 million in the past 24 hours? Am I reading this right? 30 million people went to the Drudge Report in the last 24 hours? That's refreshment. That's with refreshing the page, right? And the reason I'm running this is because it's an interesting article. Who is the most influential element in the conservative movement, I'm asking you? Look, I read, you know, many of the websites. I rarely read left-wing websites, with rare exception. Occasionally I'll go to the New York Times because, well, I grew up on it. You know, I want to see what they're doing. They've gotten worse than ever. They're more Stalinist than ever. I did find an article last week on the New York Times that I liked. It was about a ski resort in the French Alps. You can't beat them for travel. They're horrible on food. They don't know the first thing about food. Nothing. Dreck. Zero. Nothing about food. In fact, nobody knows anything about food. I was walking around San Francisco this morning, and I was in Levi's Plaza. Allegedly, they used to make dungarees. Now they don't know what they're making. They have no idea who they're designing for. They designed a company to look like a college campus so all of the advanced people can work there and feel safe and comfortable. They can't sell a pair of dungarees to save their life, but everyone feels comfortable. Way ahead of everybody with, you know, social advancement. So I like to look at the chicks and the guys walking around Levi's Plaza that they hire there. And you ask yourself, how did the old man who made dungarees for the gold miners end up with grandchildren who don't know how to run a company? And I look at the fountain, it's nice architecture. So in the plaza, there's a building that says culinary this, and everything in San Francisco is a culinary expert with running sores on their face and saliva running out of their mouth. They're all culinary experts. What my mother made on a 4-burner electric stove, they couldn't make. They drizzle raspberry juice on everything, and they think that they're culinary experts. So it was a building, I notice everything, not a fly goes by that I don't observe. The building says, judging, I don't know, like food judges. I thought they judge shows. No, they judge foods and products for manufacturers around the world. All right, everyone has to make a buck. But I said, what do they know about food? What could they possibly know about food that the average person doesn't know? As Ronald Reagan said, there is no such thing as the average person. There is no such thing as the average person. The average person is you. You're the person who has the guts to get up every morning and to go to work or go and open the door to your business and hope to God that you make enough money to pay your employees and pay your taxes. Now, that's not an ordinary person. That's an exceptional person. Ordinary people are those who work for the government who didn't have the guts or the brains to create their own business. Ask anybody. Ask anybody what it takes to create your own business or your own enterprise. Ask me what it took for me to get where I am today, despite the problems I have. And I'm not going to start complaining to you. When I read about guys who lost their legs in Iraq, I read about a guy who lost an arm and two legs, and the guy fights every day. And he wanted to go back to his unit without a hand and two legs, and he rehabilitated himself, and he went back to fight in Iraq. I said, now that's a man with guts. I never saw anything like this. So don't complain to the world about, you know, your medical problems, what you struggle with every day. Everybody has something. But I'm going to tell you right up the straight up front today, as I normally do, but more so than ever. I am 69 years old. I'm getting weaker. I'm not getting stronger, and I feel it. I'm going to tell you right now. I'd like to tell you otherwise, but I got nothing to hide. I am suffering numerous medical problems brought on by 1,000 different things, and you know what? There reaches a point where you don't want to do it anymore. What motivates me to do this anymore is almost a matter of habit number one, ego number two, and number three, a desire to save America from the communists. Probably in that order. Ego, and the desire to save America. I'd lie to you if I said it was to save America first. Anyone who says that is a liar. You know who says that. They wrap themselves in the flag. You're a great American. You're a great American. You hear them, you're a great American. Run for cover. So I'm asking you again. You know, it's a nice topic for me. We opened with the Cartoon Network with the first lady telling you to eat carrots. And we played Romper Room. Was it Romper Room? And now we went to the, what stories? The stocks are bombing. The U.S. stock market went down 1.8%. The world's burning, and she's talking about on the Cartoon Network. You hear this? The queen has no clothes? Fashion Week says, I love Hitler. Your parents should have been gassed by the Nazi people. Go buy a Dior gown after this. Go ahead. Get all you women in Palm Beach. Go ahead. Go ahead. Go buy a Dior gown. I wouldn't buy a Dior handkerchief to wipe my dog's behind after this. I wouldn't buy a Dior brassiere for a transvestite dog after this. I wouldn't personally. I never would anyway. So here it is. Oh, there's another story that caught my eye that's a complete lie. It's right at the top of Drudge, speaking of this. Financial terrorism suspected in 2008 economic crash. Pentagon study sees element. Now, I got to tell you something. I read the article from Bill Gertz in the Washington Times. I think it's a complete cover-up by the U.S. government. Now, remember what I just said. The Pentagon says they think the Russians did it or the Chinese did it or this one did it. They crashed the economy. If the Pentagon is saying this, it means Obama's saying it. And if Obama's saying it, it means his puppet master wants him to say it because his puppet masters are afraid they're going to be caught and indicted and their gold is going to be taken from them. This is the biggest cover-up of the year. I don't believe the financial terrorism caused the economic crash. I spent a year researching it. And my opinion is the opposite. It was done by domestic evil. And they did it to bring in Obama. So when you see the Pentagon sees an element of the Russians or the Chinese, I see cover-up all over that story. They're covering the tracks for one man only. And by the way, I got to tell you before I take the break, and I'm on a roll today, I can tell you that. The adrenaline is pumping from the allergies. I got to tell you right now, this is important for you to remember. Today, nation states are weaker than global capitalists such as George Soros. Let me repeat it in case you didn't hear it the first time. Nation states are today weaker than global capitalists like George Soros. Remember what Rothschild said. Give me control of a currency and I will control the country. Give me the control of the currency and I will control the nation. There's one man who controls more currencies than any man on earth. And that man, in my opinion, is George Soros. I'll be right back.
congratulations to all the nominees and winners of Cartoon Network's Hall of Game Awards. Now I'd like to acknowledge some other winners who definitely have game. The schools of St. Tammany Parish in Louisiana. They won the Let's Move U.S. Healthier Schools Challenge Award and are playing a big role to reduce childhood obesity in their community.
Bing bong, tick tock, bee-ba, boom. Flip-flop, up, up, wee, my room. Bop-a-dee-bop-a-dee-rock-a-room.
Nation states are weaker than global capitalists. The Middle East is burning. And the First Lady's talking about let them eat carrots. And I'm asking you a couple of questions. Who is the most influential conservative? I would say news source, Drudge. Is it Limbaugh? Who? Don't call and say you are, Mike. We love you. Because if you're listening, I know you like me. But in terms of gross numbers, it wouldn't be true. I'd like to know what you think. And we'll move on past this at a certain point. But I'm not ready to move on yet because I haven't taken a call. Oil is spiraling out of control in cost because there's a cartel that controls the prices. Saudi Arabia could have already opened the spigot. They haven't done it. They're enjoying the money. They're rolling in it like pigs and you know what. Our friends in Saudi Arabia who want us to use our military to defend them should open up the oil pipeline. But what do you mean they should open up the pipeline? Who's going to tell them to do it? Who's going to be tough enough to say you open the pipeline or when they come to get you, King, we won't be there, okay? Open the pipeline up. We want oil at $50 a barrel. Open the pipeline. You didn't make the oil. It's under your sand. Because the dinosaurs died 18 billion years ago. It doesn't mean you're a genius. Okay, open the oil pipe. Open up the spigot, King. What do we have a military for? What happened to this country? We can't even attack a pirate. A pirate skiff the U.S. Navy won't attack. Where's the Navy? Nowhere. Moving ships around. The schmucks in the Pentagon moving around with sticks now, or with computers. Move this there, move the aircraft carrier there. We had we got the airplanes, and we got the assets here. And if that happens there, they're all in there. They all need a box of depends there in the Admiralty, afraid that the Prince Obama will get mad at them if they actually bomb somebody in Libya.
Savage.
Give me fuel, give me fire, give me that which I desire. Ooh.
Yeah, that was good. That was like a misfired bumper from 1914. I like that song. I feel like I'm on top of things today. Yesterday I was under the volcano. Today I'm over the volcano. I have a question for you. While you're answering who's more influential, Drudge or the water carrier, Limbaugh, this is a question. Whoever answers it correctly gets a free copy of Trickle Up Poverty. When I refer to someone in the media as Bart Zelig, which is the name I'm going to use in my forthcoming novel about an avaricious newcomer in the on the conservative scene. Who am I referring to when I say Bart Zelig? Anyone who gets that correct wins a copy of Trickle Up Poverty. And I have a new phrase for you today. Big Sisyphus wants you. I was joking around during the break. You know, like Big Sis that I created. I came up with a new one, Big Sisyphus, because we were talking about me like every day pushing the stone up the hill. Only to have it fall down the next day. It's like a Greek curse, talk radio. You push the boulder up every day only to watch it roll down when you're through, and the next day you got to get up and push the boulder up again. But how can we choose it? Because we're masochistic. So I changed it to Big Sisyphus Wants You. It's a reference to anyone who wants to be in the talk radio business. Give it a shot. Saw a good movie last night on TV. I'm just throwing things out. You know how I attack Larry David for being confirming the worst stereotypes about Jewish males and Jewish women, how I think that what Larry David does is almost at the same level of the pictures that Goebbels made of the Jews in World War II, only worse because it's contemporary. How people don't see what he's doing on HBO is beyond me. He takes the worst stereotypes about Jews and he magnifies them, and they call themselves geniuses for doing that. Now, I want to compare his evil, purely evil, in my opinion, with Woody Allen, who I'm not a big fan of because, again, he stereotypes Jewish males as weaklings and you know, like, nyeh, nyeh, nyeh. But the difference between Woody Allen and Larry David is grotesquely apparent. Woody Allen is a brilliant genius who uses no dirty words, no violence, and no anti-Christian bigotry to make his point. Now, you may not like his portrayals, but he's so different than Larry David, who reverts to anti-Christian bigotry and filthy, dirty, disgusting Brooklyn sewer mouths in order to get your attention on HBO. And I saw this movie last night, which I had seen before, but I was in such a bad mood after the show, I couldn't. I had to go home and get in bed. I'm going through the worst suffering, I'm sorry, of my life. The allergies are worse than ever. The rains, then the pollen. You don't know what it's like. You say allergies are nothing. It's a severe illness. It's debilitating. In January in the Bay Area, I forget the tree, the yellow flowers already. My mind isn't even clear on it. Forget the name. They come up, and what it does for you if you have allergies, it makes your heartbeat slightly faster all night. You can't sleep. Your headache, all night long a headache, because it provokes an allergic response in you, and what you have is a small adrenaline push, and you're laying in bed with a thump, thump, thump. It's horrible. You can't control it. I've used biofeedback all my life to control my heart rate. I can't override it. So it's been awful. So anyway, to make a long story short, I stayed up watching movies. I went to bed right after I got home, stayed in bed, ate what was in the house. And I watched a lot of movies. And one of the movies I watched was Woody Allen's movie, Hollywood Ending. And it's about a film director who comes down with hysterical blindness. And he has to hide it from the investors and the whole cast and crew that he's blind. It's hilariously funny. It's so good. No dirty words, no violence, no anti-Christian bigotry, but it draws laughs because he has talent. Larry David doesn't have talent. Larry David has meanness and fundamentally a hatred for anybody but his own mental state, of his own type, meaning the guys who are on his show, his buds from Brooklyn, the lowest of the low. So let's go back to our world. Who is the most influential conservative? Is it Drudge, as the left wing is saying? Or is it Rush Limbaugh, the water carrier for the Republicans? And I'll take the first call right now on the Savage Nation. Alex in Sacramento on KSTE. Alex, your opinion, who?
Drudge Report by far, because every conservative outlet currently gets their news from Drudge.
Only from Drudge?
The vast majority, I would say, yeah.
The one thing I try not to do on my show is I don't read headlines off the Drudge Report as show prep. Rush does that, doesn't he?
I would definitely agree with that.
Yes, and I would say that Rush Limbaugh made the Drudge Report what it is. So it's a symbiotic relationship between Rush and Drudge.
Yes, definitely.
And to their credit, but he quotes the Drudge articles, drives traffic, etc., and so on, which is why Matt, although I consider him a friend, will rarely ever mention Michael Savage because Rush controls a certain clique of people who hate me. They're jealous of my genius. Thanks for the call. That's the truth. I don't mind anymore. What do I got to impress you with me? No, I don't need to impress anybody. New York City, WOR. I got a winner, though. I got a winner in a minute on who Bart Zelig is. Jerome, you're going to get the prize in a minute, but let's go to WOR New York. Eric, this is the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
I think Rush Limbaugh is like the piano player at the Catcher in the Rye, where he did his act, he was good, and then you can't tell if he became his act or if he's trying to act like he did before. So you never know.
Now, hold it. This is brilliant on your part, but I'm going to ask a question that is somewhat self-derogatory. People accuse me of faking it. They say, oh, he doesn't really believe it. He's an ex-liberal. How do you know I really believe what I'm saying?
Because you're too moody. You're up, you're down, you're here, you're there, you bring in other things. You're moody. That counts a lot as going for real. He's never moody.
Yeah, he's a normal path. Rush Limbaugh's a normal path. He's an ordinary American guy, and I respect that. If you can be a normal path, if you're born that way, with a certain, let us say, temperament, normal, go-along, get-along, average American guy, you know, the golfer type, which is good. I'm not that way at all.
I also think that you're a comedic genius, because even if you say the truth, you always add that little spin upon it. He tries to have constant irony. And when you have that kind of constant irony, it's not very believable, because you just come out pointing out the obvious.
You know, that's interesting. Consistent irony. I find somebody on MSNBC who does that, the one who looks like that Pat character who makes me crazy. She is the ugliest woman in the history of the American media. How this person could even be on television is a product of General Electric. and their incandescent light bulbs. But she thinks that just being consistently sophomorically ironic is a mark of intelligence, as though she's in a college girl with her a college dorm with her girlfriends. Every remark is this pseudo ironic statement. Don't they know that irony gets boring after a while?
Very, very boring.
And I don't think irony is the by the way, irony I don't think is as good as sarcasm or satire, incidentally. And I don't think people even know the difference between irony, satire, and sarcasm, do they?
How would you
define my best humor? Would you say it's ironic, satirical? What would you say it is?
Your best humor is when you pull something out of the past, you bring it to the future, and then you put a spin on it, where you go from patent to patent leather. That's not irony. That's satirical.
Okay, that's interesting. That's a turn of phrase. That's hard to do. Yeah, it just has to come out of thin air, almost like a Houdini. You can't think of those things. Sometimes I'm riding a bike, I get it. Sometimes in the middle of the night, I'll wake up and I'll have a chuckle. You know, a name will pop up at 3 in the morning. I have to get out of bed and write it down. You know where I got that from? You want to hear something? We were talking yesterday in Savage Nation, to go backwards for a minute, Jerome and everyone else, about influences on men and how parents are the most important influence, or used to be or should be, right? I remember when the things you hear as a kid, right? Family. So we had family from Brooklyn, and there was a distant relative who I don't even think I ever met, who was the educated one in the family. He was I don't remember what he did. He was a chemist with a PhD who was so beyond everyone else in the family because they were immigrants, small merchants, etc. They were hardworking. Didn't mean they were stupid. And they would say, I think his name was Julie. They would say, oh, Julie got up in the middle of the night. Sometimes he gets up in the middle of the night. He writes down formulas. You hear? Now, that so impressed me that a man would get out of bed in the middle of the night and write something down that I never forgot it. But you see what I'm saying about influence?
Yes. And I think Drudge, as far as your question concerns conservatives, I think conservatives go to every outlet for their answer.
So do I personally do as well. You've got many sites. You've got all of them. And they're all cliquish. Every one of them is cliquish. Almost none of them will cover people who are not in their group. They won't mention Michael Savage, which I don't care. Look how far I've gotten without him. And it's on pure horsepower. Pure brilliance and horsepower. I don't need them. So you'll see that certain sites that are excellent will never mention Michael Savage, but they're excellent anyway. The only site that ever mentions me is the WorldNet Daily, because we're tied at the hip. And Joe is a straight-up conservative, as honest as they come. He doesn't. I don't even know if he listens to the show, but he is. Chris Ruddy has moved to the center, but Chris is a good guy. Chris's site is very important. Newsmax, he's more mainstream, middle of the road today, don't you think?
I don't know who that is.
You don't? Okay, well, all right. Eric, what do you do for a living? I'm curious that you have the time to listen to the show.
Well, I'm a personal trainer. I spend a lot of time in my car going from place to place.
That's interesting. A lot of people in the physical arts listen to the show for energy when I'm in an energetic mood. The springtime is the worst time for me because my energy sucks from allergies. It's a nightmare. Every year it's on the air. Would you believe it? What I have to overcome? I'm in bed 18 hours a day in this time of year. You know that? I am in bed when I'm not on the air. I can hardly function. It's frightening. But I want to ask you something. Eric, if I hired you as a personal trainer, I mean, you really push people beyond their limits. Isn't that what you do?
Well, it depends where you are in your training. Some people have to be built up to be there.
Well, what if they don't want to be pushed? Is it healthy to always push people? Isn't there a point at which you can hurt them?
Well, it all depends where you are in your training.
Well, I'm giving you an example. You know that Sweat Lodge trial that's ongoing right now where people pay $10,000 to go to a Sweat Lodge somewhere, I think Arizona, I don't know where, and then he made them stay in a Sweat Lodge. He said they'd move ahead in 5 points of their lives, personal, financial, spiritual, if they stayed in the Indian Sweat Lodge. He killed 3 of them. I'm a believer in the middle way. I'm not a believer in the, you know, I learned in my 30s, I said that, and I don't mean to step on your career. With younger people, I think you can push them, but I think with older people, I think it's quite dangerous to push them beyond a certain point with exercise. Do you have that in your mind when you're working with people over 50?
My philosophy is safety first, because I don't want you going to someone else and saying, I hurt you in any kind of way. I always want you to.
I just want to leave you and everyone else with one thought. I was a runner in my 30s. I was a fanatic. I was thin, low cholesterol. I weighed 130 pounds. I don't know why. I was really, and I was running up a mountain. I told the story five times. Running up a mountain every day in the back of a valley in Marin County. And I was gagging in the running, right? I was 32, 33, I don't remember, like that age. And a voice started to scream in my head, you're going to die, you're going to die, you're going to die. I thought I was going crazy. And I stopped running. I never ran again. I wouldn't run now to a bus. I won't run for anything anymore. And I learned from that point on, it was my inner wisdom screaming at me, that for me it wouldn't work, that pushing, that whole Indian lore, you know, of real hard. I try to advise people over 40 to follow the middle way, the moderate Asian way, moderate Asian way, the middle road. There's a middle road for exercise, isn't there?
But I think it goes for the individual. I don't think there's a...
All right. And I think young people like to push themselves and get their angst out through exercise, and I understand that as well. Maybe it takes away their sexual madness or urges, the running. Does that work on the sexual thing?
I would say the people that push themselves the hardest are women over 40.
Why? Because they're sexually frustrated?
Not at all, because...
No, come on. They can't get anyone, so they run it out, is that...
I won't say those things.
Okay, thanks. No, okay, I'm staying, but this is what comes out of me. I see the runners with the hush and the poof and the looking at the hand. I see people running. I know what they're doing. They couldn't take another minute in bed. 5 a.m. with the watch running in a cold morning. Who would do that? Who would run? What normal person gets out of bed 5 a.m. to run? What sane race, what sane society on earth ever advised that for survival? There's not a society on earth that survived that told their citizens to get up at dawn and run on a beach. Even the Marines don't run after they leave basic training like that. Nobody does that. You got to be nuts. I have a place in Florida on the ocean that I don't go to. Crazy, isn't it? I should be there right now. Like nuts. There's no allergies on the ocean. But I don't go there because of the social isolation. It's like always something wrong in the world. Do you know that there's no perfect world? I understand finally, and this is terrible. I now know where the graves used to say R.I.P., rest in peace. But I don't even want to go there. I mean, it's a bad thing to say. Because it's like a point maybe in my life, or because the world's so screwed up under the Cartoon Network that's running the show. Wherever I go, there's something severely wrong with the place. So like if I'm in the Bay Area, which is very beautiful, the people are so mentally sick that you can't tolerate it. This is the first city in America that made the people of the city of the state pay for sex change operations, even for convicts. And they want to ban circumcision. They want to tell Jews that you can't circumcise. You go to jail if you want to circumcise, but you have to pay for sex change operations to have a schlemiel cut off. If we want to meet a guy who's so insane that he wants his schmigegi cut off to become an ugly woman who needs to take hormone shots, you're going to pay to have the schmuck cut off, you're going to pay to have the schmigegi cut off and to pay for the hormone shots. But if you're a Jew who wants a circumcision or anyone else, we're going to put you in jail. So the city's impossible to live in because of the psychosis here. The psychosis is beyond belief, and it's not from the water. So then you go to Florida where it's on the ocean and the air is good and there's no allergies, and you could die from the landscape. It's flat. There's no mountains. And everyone looks either like they're from Brownsville, Brooklyn. It's nothing wrong with it. Either they got the Guido cross or they got the chai. Either they're the bagel eaters or the cannoli eater. Or they look like lizards who mated with a man. I'll be right back. Is the Cartoon Network coming out of the White House now? I asked the question earlier. I have invented a character named Bart Zelig, who I will be using in my novel as a sort of, how shall I put it? I wouldn't say imposter, but someone trying to break into the conservative scene who sees an opportunity. And I asked callers to identify who Bart Zelig might be. Portland, Jerome, you're on the Savage Nation.
Andrew Breitbart.
I'm not going to answer yes or no, but why would you say that? How would you define Andrew Breitbart?
Exactly as you just described it, somebody who's trying to break into the scene. I believe he is like you, that he is trying to save America, and obviously the name Bart was in both of them.
Very, very interesting. Well, you win a free copy of Trickle Up Poverty. I'm going to leave it neutral.
Well, that Breitbart fellow, he's really on the move. Well, that young fella, he's going to go places. Oh, you got to give it to... He's grown a beard. He looks like Savage 20 years ago. Oh, he's going to go far. Oh, that Breitbart fella, he's everywhere. Wherever you look, he pops up. Why, tea party here, tea party there. He was just in Wisconsin, then he's in L.A. That Breit fella, he sure gets around. Oh, I don't know where that young fella gets that energy from. That Breitbart fella, he's really connected into that Hollywood. He knows all them fellas on the whatever.
You get the picture, don't you? Hey, look, it's a very busy world out there. It's very competitive, and everyone's going to make a buck. You know what I mean? Whichever way the wind blows, that's all. So how do you tell if someone's real? How do you tell if someone really believes what they're saying? How do you, the listener, remember, at the end of the day, we're all trying to appeal to you. I'm not talking to 12 people here. I have one of the largest audiences in the media, in American media history. And you listen to me. Many of you listen religiously. So I'm not asking you to assuage my ego. How do you tell if somebody really means what they're saying? What do you do? What's your S detector on somebody? And I don't care if you're a liberal or a conservative. What do you use to judge whether a person really believes what they're saying? How do you judge? How do you tell whether they're pulling your chain or just doing it for a buck? I want the answer, because it's now being bandied about. That's the way that the Alinsky school taught the left to destroy people on the right. Say they're all making it up. They don't really believe it. How do you tell?
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
When we make choices to be more healthy and active, we all win. So join me and Cartoon Network, and let's all improve our game. To find out how you can get your school involved with the Let's Move campaign, go to CartoonNetwork.com.
That's all. All right, that's the world that we're in. Cartoon president, and the First Lady appears on the Cartoon Network. The world's burning. Nation states are now weaker than global capitalists like George Soros. Obama may be the one in front of the cameras, but men such as Jeffrey Immelt of GE are frankly, in my opinion, the ones who call the shots. 100 years ago, the great powers, Britain, France, and Germany. Well, 100 years ago, the great powers were Britain, France, Germany, and the United States. Okay, let's go back. Today, the great powers 100 years ago were Britain, France, Germany, the U.S., Russia, you'd say. They had a pretty powerful navy till the Japanese sank them. But anyway, today the real powers are Goldman Sachs, Exxon, and Google. And, of course, some unknown hedge funds. The global capitalists who control these companies have far greater power than the leader of any state, and they operate outside the law of any nation. They're unelected. So when you're watching the uprisings in the Middle East, you should know that it has less to do with which dictator did what or how Russia has responded at the UN than what certain individuals are doing to twist events in favor of profit for themselves. As the Middle East is burning, the globalists are earning. That's the end of the news for the day. The rest you can read for yourself. Now, we stumbled on a topic in the last hour, which is who is more powerful and influence over conservative thought, Drudge or Limbaugh or anyone else. I also asked you a leading question at the end of the hour, which I'd like to repeat, which is how do you tell if somebody's really meaning what they say, really means what they say, or they're just faking it for the money? What do you use as an S detector? Whether you're a liberal or a conservative. Liberals like to say they really know if someone's telling the truth. That since they lie to everybody, they pretty much can tell when someone's lying, they think. And then we talked about other topics here in the Savage Nation. I compared Woody Allen to that slime ball from Brooklyn, Larry David. And I said, although Woody Allen, to me, also denigrates the image of the Jewish male, making him into a neurotic, Woody Allen has great talent. He doesn't use filthy words. He doesn't use violence. And he doesn't use anti-Christian bigotry to make his point. Whereas the vermin from Brooklyn, Larry David, and his cohorts from Canarsie use filthy, dirty words. They're fundamentally, there's an undertone of violence. They have anti-Christian bigotry in almost every word that comes out of the characters' mouths. And that's why you got to compare, you know, it's like differences, you understand? And if I'm comparing a difference, although in this, if they're in the same genotype, Woody Allen and Larry David are in the same sphere, but they're very different. It's the same with Michael Savage. I'm in the same sphere as Rush Limbaugh, but I'm very different than him. You see what I'm saying? The subtleties? I'm trying to get a couple of points across. By the way, here's a movie that you will not be seeing in the near future. I understand it's not going to be made. It's Martin Scorsese directing Lady Gaga in the life story of Arianna Huffington. The working title is From Plato to Play-Doh. From Plato to Play-Doh. 1-800-449-8255. Mike in Pittsburgh, PA. What's on your mind? Go ahead, please.
Well, I was going to say, in terms of knowing whether someone's real or not, I think it's more of, well, there's two things, whether someone's real or whether someone's really good. Like, a real person seems to come off in terms of, like, they don't compromise what they believe in. But a crazy person can be the same way. Or even a real evil person. They don't compromise on those things, but they also don't buckle to outside influences and to the pressure that everyone puts upon them to be a certain person or act a certain way.
Right, right. You're making a very good point. So, therefore, in the midst of all of this, how do you judge as a listener and a reader of internet and other media, radio, TV, how do you judge who's telling the truth?
Lots and lots of listening repetitively. I've listened to you a lot. I listen to Jerry Doyle. I've listened to, there's a few that I think really are right on the mark. But over time, I assess whether these people are flip-flopping in the wind or just, you know, going with the political breezes or if they're just actually speaking what they feel. And there's very, very few in this world anymore. And Michael Savage, you are one of the few. And
well,
let me say,
all I can say to you is this. I don't know the other people, what they really think. I think most of the people in the top do believe what they say, truthfully, on the right, that I've met or that I've heard about. I can't speak for anyone on the left because I don't really know anybody in the media on the left. I don't know what they believe. I know that many people in Hollywood who I've come to meet, who are very high up, all tell me on the side that although they're diehard Democrats, they believe in a lot of what I say. They agree with a lot of what I say. They can't say it, though, because of political reasons in the world in which they run. You've got to understand that many people who define themselves as moderate Democrats are somewhat conservative, but they can't show it. You know what I'm saying? Because their powers are controlled to a great extent. Their social world would come to an end if they ever expressed certain opinions, because the left rules their world like fascism. There's almost no tolerance for any diversion of thought in groupthink. And some of these people are extremely powerful, by the way. And yet even they cannot express themselves outside of their, close circles, Mike.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Well, I thank you for being such a long-term listener. You know, I'm going to tell you something about radio. Radio, of all the mediums, is, I would think, the easiest to tell if someone's BSing you. Because all we got is our voice. We have no other special effects. We don't have legs to cross. We don't have lipstick. We're not the lipstick girls on Fox. Some of them are very pretty. And I'm sure they're very sincere. But, you know, you got the female charms. You know, how could you not want to believe someone is so pretty, right? You don't know what I look like. You don't want to know what I look like. Trust me. I don't want to know what I look like. What time and gravity does to a person. I look back at myself in pictures 20 years ago. I don't want to look forward 20 years. But that's neither here nor there. All I got is my voice. And so all you've got is your ears. You got nothing else, your ears and your thinking. So you say, is this guy on the level? So I want to, I guess I'm not doing this for a reason. There's no reason other than one of the tactics of the radical left, as funded by George Soros through the fake Stalinist group Media Matters, is to say that everyone on the right is making it up, that they're faking it. They don't believe a word they say. Denigrate those on the right, say they don't really mean it. So you've got to be very careful what you read and what you listen to, you know? Now I'm going to take some more calls. I'm having such a good time. It's amazing because I didn't think I would. I didn't feel good today. I woke up sick. As I told you, beware the Ides of March. Man, March 1st comes, I'm sick. Certain thing comes in bloom out here. I get like crazy from it. Emotionally, my adrenaline gets pushed. I can't sleep. And yet my mind is sharper than ever when I go on the air because I'm using the adrenaline to drive my insights. I can actually feel it. On the air, I'm as sharp as a tack. Off the air, I have to stay in bed most of the time. The struggle is overwhelming. I mean, it's really getting bad. So Israel in New York, go ahead. You're on the Savage Nation on WOR. Go ahead, please.
Dr. Savage, there's only two ways to identify people. It's through their voice, their tone of voice, and if you have the pleasure of seeing them, is their eyes, because the eyes are the gateway to the soul and never lie.
Okay, but wait. Now, in radio, you can't see my eyes. All you can hear is my voice, correct?
That's correct. So it's a tone of voice. People who are making things up or reading off of teleprompters, usually their voices go up and down. They're not as even keel as a person who's telling the truth.
Now, Israel, were you in the Mossad?
No.
Did you work for the DEA undercover in Belarus? I mean, how do you come to this conclusion?
I've read over the years books and books on behaviorisms, mannerisms, and it's just basic 101 stuff.
Yeah. You know, it's funny you should say it. Again, going back to one of my favorite villains, Larry David. I was watching an HBO piece the other night where all of the actors in that series, you know who I'm talking about, right? Or not?
Sure.
Okay. So each actor had to say which were their favorite piece was. And you could see when they're talking about it, they get enthusiastic. And then at the end, when they say how great Larry is, their eyes shift. Their eyes jump left to right or right to left, like they have to say it, and you could see that they're lying. I couldn't believe it. Each and every one of them, when they were extolling their show and how great it was, at the end, their eyes darted to the left or to the right. I said, these people are just outright lying.
And then I said,
you're shocked an actor is lying? That's something new? They're actors. What do you expect them to say when the guy pays their bill?
This is why people in general, you should know, who shouldn't be trusted. That's why a lot of them always wear sunglasses in the same way security people wear sunglasses, not to give up what they're thinking in their mind.
Okay, now this is an important point. That's not 100% true. This is a cultural thing, Israel. There are cultures that do not look you in the eye and they're not lying. It's just a very uncomfortable thing for people from certain cultures. I believe it's an Asian thing, by the way, not to look you in the eye. And it doesn't mean they're lying. It's considered an invasion of their soul. You know, the American people are very into staring you in the eye while you're talking. I find it very uncomfortable. If I'm in a conversation, why do I have to have a staring contest with somebody when my mind is trying to think? It's two different things. I've seen men, they try to stare you in the eye like, are you really telling the truth? Tell me. It's like, can we just have a conversation here? I'm thinking. While I'm thinking, I can't think about staring into your irises right now. I don't know if it's 100% true. I personally don't always stare in someone's eye. When I do so, it's because I know that they're thinking about how my eyes are moving, so I do it on purpose to control them. But it's not how I really like to operate because my mind is moving at a very rapid speed, and I don't have the time to think about looking them in the eye. Does that mean I'm lying to them?
No, but depending which way one's eyes turn when you're talking to them, it also gives away other clues of what their intents are. So if a person looks up, their eyes, they're fetching for answers.
Yeah, that's true. How about if their eyes dart to the left? They're lying, aren't they?
There's many theories.
Well, I'm going to tell you another theory. How about liars on television? Have you watched their tongue or their mouth when they lie? I can see it 100 times in one guy. Softball, probably the biggest fraud in television, who was talentless, a talentless hack with the straw hair, Chris Matthews of MSNBC. This guy is hysterical. You talk about hysterical blindness, this guy has hysterical liarness. The man lies constantly. Everything he says is what he lacks in talent, he makes up for with malice. Does that work for you?
It works. The problem is once they become a pathological liar, sometimes they're able to throw people off and not give out the cues that normally one would.
Bingo. I've seen that, by the way. I know someone in business. What amazes me is that he does not even know he's lying anymore. He says things about himself that are not true, that are patently false, and he doesn't even know he's lying. It rolls off his tongue. I'll tell you another giveaway of a constant a liar in business. You know how honest they are every time you talk to them when you didn't even ask them. You're having a conversation about something to do with your business, and they always tell you how honest they are. And you didn't ask them about that. Have you noticed that?
This is true.
Michael, yeah.
New York, 14 years listening. My entire family listens. May God give you the energy.
Oh, well, God, yeah, God. Don't get me started now with my God problem. I'm going through a period of doubt that's it's going on 4 months now. Israel, let me send you a copy of Trickle Up Poverty. I'm going through real, for the first time in my adult life. It's not a good thing. Not exactly moving into the atheism or agnosticism. I'm moving into another world. And I started out as a cynic. And then I refound God. And okay, and it helped me a lot. It really helped me a lot. Got me very far in life. And I got to tell you something. When you don't believe, it's very hard to live. It's extremely hard to live because there's nothing to fall back upon other than the voodoo. Now you say, well, it's voodoo. How dare you say, okay, call it voodoo. Call it what you want. All I can tell you is very hard to live in those moments of doubt if you don't have that voodoo to rely upon. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Welcome back to the Savage Nation. We just got a report that Google is installing upskirt cameras all around America with the approval of the FCC. That's right. Now that they've filmed your house and your driveway, they're going to be filming upskirts, of course, with, as I said to you, nation states today are weaker than global capitalists such as those who have created Google. You say, well, that's all to the power to them. No, that's what governments were created for, was to control people who became too powerful. You're not supposed to have individuals who are not elected with this much power. You understand how it works? Again, I want to repeat something that you shouldn't forget. Rothschild said, Daddy Rothschild said, give me the control of a currency and I will control the nation. Okay? Now let's go to the top story on the Drudge Report. Where it's not any of the top. It came from Washington Times this morning, where they claim that the economic meltdown that we saw in 08 was caused by outside forces, China, Russia, you name it. And they said the Pentagon is hinting at that. That means immediately it's a cover-up by the Obama administration because he was put in power, in my opinion now, by those who crashed the economy to elect him. They created chaos. Remember what Rahm Emanuel said? Never let a crisis go to waste. They created an economic crisis. They brought in this unknown man, spoke well, clean-cut, nice family. And people said, well, I'll take a chance on him. I don't want that McCain fella. He's a good guy, but, I don't know. He's too much like that Bush. Let's try that young fella. You know, let's give him a try. So now they have their puppet in the White House. And they have a communist machine in the White House. And now people are on to them. And the Republicans have some power. So the puppeteers are having the Defense Department put out disinformation saying that it was China who did it or Russia who did it. That's my theory. Can I prove it? No. One man's opinion. I have no influence whatsoever over this world. I certainly don't have any influence other than through my own imagination. And as the left would say, I'm just an entertainer. So don't take me seriously. Believe important sources, not mine. I'm just an entertainer. What do I know? You know, after all of what I've written, it's all made up. 26 books, PhD, lived in the jungle, saved rainforests. It's all made up. He's really a hippie herbalist. He doesn't really believe a word he says. No, believe the guy in the cafe on Funny Checks. Believe the people who don't work for a living. They really know the truth. Just ask them. They're all over this country. You walk around, you see them in cafes. They don't work a day in their life, but they know everything.
Savage.
Welcome back to the Savage Nation. We've been talking about who is more influential as a conservative in America. And I named two names, Drudge and someone in the radio. And we named some other people. And I want to introduce you to, I would say, a new friend of mine. I had him at my home a couple of months ago. It's Dick Morris. with his intelligent, lovely wife, Eileen McGann. And Dick has a new book out. Dick, welcome to the Savage Nation. Dick, the title is Revolt, How to Defeat Obama and Repeal the Socialist Programs. Is that correct?
Yep, that's the title.
Let me ask you right off the bat, Dick Morris. The Republicans are well known for, you know, snatching defeat from the jaws of victory, so to speak. Who can beat Obama in 2012 on the Republican side?
Well, I think that a lot of people could. I think the question is, what's Obama doing at this point? If he's vulnerable, we've got a lot of horses that could take him out. If he's not, no matter how good a candidate you have, you're not going to be able to beat him.
Now, this is very important. When you say right, it's 2 years. It's a long time from now. When you say how he's doing, you mean what? On the mainly economy, correct?
No, I mean his popularity, his job approval. When I went to work for Clinton after he lost Congress, my efforts were devoted to moving him to the center. And, he passed welfare reform and balanced the budget and stuff like that.
Right.
And Obama says that he wants to do the same thing. And he makes noises where he talks about cutting government regulations and stuff like that. But it's clear he doesn't really mean it because the guts of his program is still very, very liberal.
Let's compare Clinton to Obama. Obama's a lifetime pan-Leninist. I define him as an ideologue without a country. That's what I mean by pan-Leninism. Is Bill Clinton as ideologically to the left, or was he, rather? I don't think he is anymore. He's changed dramatically since he left office. But was he as dramatically to the left at that time as Obama is today?
No, not at all. Clinton is a moderate who was a liberal when he had to be. Obama is a leftist who's a moderate when he has to be.
Very well put, Dick. That's why you're so good at what you do. Do you think of the candidates, and I know this is sensitive, it's a sensitive issue, if you were to say Romney, Huckabee, I don't think Huckabee's electable, by the way. I don't care what the polls say. Do you agree with me?
Well, I think Romney, I'm concerned about Romney because he's pushed Obamacare in Massachusetts.
Yes, I agree 100%. It'll come back to haunt him. The left will attack him on that.
And then you have Palin and Huckabee and Gingrich, and all three of them are very popular. Conservatives like them. I think they're all very good people. But the problem is that they all have high negatives. And the question is, can they live them down and lower them between now and the time the primaries actually take place?
I don't think that Gingrich can do it. He's a retread. As intelligent as he is, he's too much of an insider to pretend to be suddenly Mr. Revolutionary of the right. Palin, I never thought was electable. I always liked her politics, Dick. I didn't think she was electable for a number of reasons. And here's one of the main reasons. Women are afraid of her. They're afraid to give her the nuclear football.
Yeah.
They don't trust a woman with it. I'm telling you. I've talked to some intelligent conservatives. They're afraid of giving Sarah Palin that power. They shouldn't be, but they are.
I think she's had a terrible baptism of fire, a very sexist, when she entered the media. But
yes.
I think that but we have a very good bullpen. You have a number of really good second-tier candidates who could step up. You have Chris Christie, who I hope will run. You have Mitch Daniels from Indiana, who's doing a great job. You have Santorum, former senator from Pennsylvania. You have DeMint, a senator from South Carolina.
But Dick, between you and I, Santorum's a has-been, never could win, in my opinion. I would love to see the fellow from New Jersey run. I think he's electable. He's got the horsepower. Romney, I agree, is vulnerable on many fronts. He was nowhere to be seen for years while the conservatives were in the trenches. Now he's suddenly Johnny-come-lately again, and he's got the Romney Care thing around his neck. It's an albatross that will never leave him. What about the real wild card here? And we both met Mr. Trump when we were at Mar-a-Lago together. Do you think Donald could win?
I think he could win, absolutely. And I think that I think he could be a very strong candidate. But what my book is devoted to, Mike, is how to take down Obama. And that has a lot more to do with the Congress right now than it does with the potential candidates.
Mm-hmm.
And what I'm wrote about is how you can use our one-house majority to repeal his programs and defeat him. So, for example, I'm saying that when the IRS appropriation comes up,
right,
the Republicans say we're going to cut out all the money for Obamacare.
Right.
And he'll veto it or the Senate won't pass it. And then I'm saying the Republicans should say, we're not going to close down the government, but we are going to zero fund the IRS until you pass a budget that does not fund the enforcement of Obamacare. Mm-hmm. I'm afraid it's going to have to close its doors.
Mm-hmm.
And until you pass a budget that does not let the EPA regulate carbon, no funding for the EPA.
Right.
Until you pass a budget that the FCC can't close down talk radio, I'm afraid they're going to have to close their doors, too. And I call it a targeted government shutdown, where you don't do an Armageddon, where you close everything. But you take specific agencies that embody the core of the Obama agenda,
right,
and defund them and until Obama gives in.
Are the Republicans doing that, in fact?
Say again?
Are the Republicans, in fact, doing that?
I think they will do that. I've had long talks with most of their leaders about that. And actually, I'm going down on Thursday morning to meet with the Republican congressman to discuss this or explain this concept to them. But the idea is that you target each of these agencies for cuts and to roll back the agenda that Obama has been pushing. The other point, which I think they're doing nicely, is that you trade dollars for time. You want to keep the government open for, and you want $4 billion of cuts, okay, you get 2 weeks.
Right.
You want another 2 weeks? Come up with another $4 billion. When they come to the debt limit increase, you want to have a debt limit for 4 weeks? Okay, put another $10 billion on the table. And you constantly keep this issue center stage. And Obama always has to be fighting for his leftist programs and his spending. And he can't move to the center because he doesn't get any room to do that.
Mm-hmm.
The Republicans are all over him like a good basketball guard, stopping him from getting the rhythm to be able to shoot. And that's what I think you do to him at the federal level. Then the second part of this, which we write about, even though the book was written in November, is at the state level, like in Wisconsin. We predict all that. And what you do is you undermine the financial base of the Democratic Party by crippling the teachers' union, SEIU, and the AFSCME, by state-level reforms.
Well, let's stop right there. So the left is saying that the governor of Wisconsin wants to bust the unions. Are they correct?
Yeah, I think they are.
So how do you justify breaking a union? I mean, I have my own answer. What would your answer be to an average person who says unions are okay? We know that there's a lot of corruption, but they've given the workers so many benefits. How do you answer that?
Unions have an absolute right, which Walker concedes, to negotiate for wages and benefits. But they have no right to tell us we can't fire bad teachers or we can't pay good teachers more. Or parents can't choose where to send their children.
Mm-hmm.
And those are the issues that he wants to take off the bargaining table.
Mm-hmm.
And what he wants to do is to break the political power of the unions, not their work for their workers.
Are they more powerful today than they were 20 years ago?
Oh, of course they are.
That's an absurd question. Let's start again. The union's resurgence began with Obama, would you say, just in the last 2 years?
No. Their control developed over the last 30 years at the state and local level. Industrial unions, private sector unions, are dead. Only 7% of the labor force.
Right.
But 43% of state workers are in unions.
Uh-huh.
In the 70s and 80s and 90s and 10,000 in the last decade,
right,
they solidified their control over the schools and over the hospitals and over the health care force.
Uh-huh.
And they run those with an iron hand. You could no better example than in New York City, Mike. There are 4,000 teachers who are so deranged and physically or sexually abusive,
right,
not allowed to teach classes, but they can't be fired. They get full pay and benefits, cost $80 million a year. And now Bloomberg wants to lay them off first, and the union won't let them.
But those 4,000 teachers, what do? They work for the unions, I understand?
They show up every day. No, not at all. They show up every day and go to what are called rubber rooms.
They sit and play solitaire or watch Oprah Winfrey?
Exactly. And we pay full pay and benefits.
And the union contract prohibits their firing?
Correct. But not just that. Not just that, Mike. It's far worse than that. Bloomberg has to fire 6,000 teachers in New York. He says, let's fire those 4,000 first, so I don't have to fire all these good new young teachers I've hired in the last 4 years.
Oh, don't tell me the union says, no, you can't target them?
says, no, you can't, and Bloomberg's going to the legislature to ask them for permission, and the union's fighting him every step of the way.
Unbelievable. Look, the book from Dick Morris is called Revolt. Is that the headline title?
It's Revolt, and the subtitle is How to Defeat Obama and Repeal His Socialist Agenda, A Patriot's Guide.
Now, Dick, your website, vote.com, is a very big website, is it not?
Yeah, but the main one is dickmorris.com.
Oh, God, who can remember that one? Now, wait a minute. What does dickmorris.com have on it?
Sorry. And all of my ranting and raving is right there. On Dick
well,
Morris.
It's good. No, I met you in Florida, Dick. We had never met before. I thought it was we had good chemistry. Don't you agree?
We did, except one thing that I do not understand about you is you have this gorgeous, gorgeous house right on the sand, on the beach, and you turn to me and you say, I hate sand.
Remember when I cracked you up and I said I look out the window at dawn and I see people running and I don't understand why anybody would run at dawn?
That's right. That's right.
You broke up laughing because I think you secretly agree with me.
The sun and the beach.
How about this, Dick? You want to tell the audience about Teddy biting your toes? My right. dog kept biting Dick's feet.
we were at this lunch with Trump and some other folks, and he was, and Michael and his wonderful wife were busy telling us what this great dog they had and how much they loved him and how absolutely fabulous he was. And the dog makes a beeline for Eileen's and my feet and begins biting them.
Not at the lunch. It was when you came to our house that night, Dick. Don't make up a fib.
But you know what?
Dick Morris is one of the most influential American political consultants. He's generally right. Have you ever been wrong in any of your prognostications, Dick?
I said that we'd win the Senate, and we came close, but we didn't. But I was right about the House, and in outrage, we predicted the Fannie Mae crisis, and in fleeced, we predicted the stock market crash a year before it happened. In catastrophe, we said that the stimulus package wouldn't work, and in our last book, 2010, Take Back America, we predicted 60 to 70 seat pickup in the House. But I did not predict that you would have a dog that would single-handedly try to cripple me for life.
No, Teddy didn't mean anything. He just liked your socks. It wasn't you.
Now, you know what?
So Dick, before you go, give us a prediction. Who's going to win in 2012, Obama or the Republicans?
Oh, the Republicans, absolutely. Absolutely.
You mean you're saying no matter who they run, he's finished? He's a one-termer?
I believe he's a one-termer. It's not no matter who they run. If they run somebody who's terrible, they could get clobbered. But I think they'll vet them really well in the primary process, and I think we got a lot of great candidates.
What if they make the mistake of running McCain again? It's over, isn't it?
Oh, McCain isn't going to run again.
But are you sure they won't do it again?
Yeah, I'm positive. And they'll run a real Republican this time, not someone who's a hybrid. Now, can I tell them the ad that I told Trump he should run?
Sure.
Get a picture of Obama, and he says, you're fired.
To himself?
No, to the audience. That's the ad.
Get a picture of Obama and say, you're fired. Dick Morris, I hope to see you one day, not on the sand, but in the sands of time. The title of the book is Revolt by Dick Morris. Thank you very much for being with us on the Savage Nation. I hope you go to the top of the lists.
Thank you, Mike. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Very nice man, and Eileen McGann is his wife. Very, very intelligent people. Really, they're two of the most intelligent people I ever met and really dedicated to what they do. I'll be right back.
Savage.
What's going on in the world here? I don't even dare talk about some of the problems. Dick Morris was just with us with his new book. I'd like to go back to some of the earlier calls on the Savage Nation, but before I do, if you're calling on that topic and you know what it is, please stay on a minute or two. I want to read you some of the headlines on my own website, michaelsavage.com, because I don't know what's up there right now. I'm interested myself what made it to the top, but probably about me. Congressman calls for lifting of Britain's ban on Savage. That's Congressman Alan West. That's the second congressman to join in. That would be Culberson was the first. One side note, okay? Congressman Alan West called me on my cell phone yesterday. I was in my car, and he said he would help me with this. And I said, remember Ramos and Campion? He said, yes, I do. I said, remember they were falsely accused, the Border Patrol agents? They were put in jail. He said, yes, I do. I said, they got 100 signatures, both conservative and liberal, Democrat, Republican, saying that they were falsely accused, falsely arrested under George Bush, and they got them out of jail finally because there were 100 signatures in Congress. I said, is there any way you can get the Tea Party people to get behind getting me off Britain's ban? He said, you know what? I'm going to work on it. So I'm making an emergency plea to you, the listener. I need one thing from you. Please go to michaelsavage.com and sign my petition. It's free. Why? I need you on the petition because we need the petition to send to the Congress to show them. We have 80,000 people on it now, right? If we crack 100,000 people, how can they ignore 100,000 people who want them to do something? How? How is it possible? Do tyrants fear America anymore? Asks Niall Gardner of the London Telegraph. And he writes, the debacle of Washington's handling of the Libya issue is symbolic of a wider problem at the heart of the Obama administration's foreign policy. What foreign policy? How about our great attorney general, Eric Holder, who said the Black Panther case focused demeans my people? Did you hear this? My people. Holder says the Black Panther case focused demeans, quote, my people. I thought he was the attorney general for all people, but little did you know, huh? I guess some people are more equal than others in Animal Farm. Bakersfield, California. Craig, go ahead, please. You're on the Savage Nation.
Thank you, Michael. Just in reference to your topic that you mentioned earlier about how can you tell if someone is telling the truth or if they're kind of, as you would say, BSing it? And my answer to that is finding passion. If the person speaks with passion, you know quite well that they are believable. And one of the things which I'd like to make the comparison to is, say, let's analyze the golfer. When you have an established routine and when you know what buttons to push, it becomes a routine that develops a path of contention because you just go through the motions and you have this mono persona that takes place. You, on the other hand, Michael, you have this element of some days you can come in, you can feel a bit flat, and then there's some days where you just jump in the sky and you soar, and it's incredible. That is a passion that you have, and you show that over the radio.
That's interesting. Well, I think people like yourself are very acute listeners, and you draw your own conclusions as to who you wish to believe for your own reasons. It doesn't mean that someone who's a passionate is not telling the truth, though. I have to say that. I mean, look, you yourself are probably of British origins. I don't know. I mean, I'm not prying. But, you know, there are people who make a habit of not being passionate who are very honest. Isn't that true?
Yeah, that is extremely true. I mean, if you want to look at, say, you know, the man with the chalkboard, let's call him, he has this, he's had a rock DJ background, and he has this rock DJ performer shtick, and when he went
Wait, I'm sorry, he has a what background?
Rock DJ shtick.
Rock DJ, right, and he makes up for his lack of education with a lot of marks on four blackboards, I know that. You know, it's funny because he's become a parody of the young professor who doesn't know what he's talking about. I remember I've told this 100 times on the show, my best professors were the superior, full professors, very old, who never made a mark on a blackboard. They just talked to you quietly like you were sitting on a seesaw. And the young professor would come in and put, 100 formulae on the boards, and he'd give you tests because he himself was insecure. It's the mark of the guy who doesn't know what he's talking about with all those blackboards.
Compensate what you...
Because he can't remember half the stuff. So he writes it down like he's teaching himself by copying it off a teleprompter. He wants you to think he knew it. Anyway, that's how I see it. You know, I wish everybody luck. They're all doing the right thing on the right side. And thank God they're fighting the evils of communism. Don't call them Democrats. Call them what they are, communists.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Blue Monday, how I hate Blue Monday. Got to work like a slave all day. Here come Tuesday, oh, Tuesday. I'm so tired, got no time to play.
You know, the death of the West was predicted by Otto Spengler over 100 years ago. It doesn't take any more than Barack Obama and Cameron of England to tell us that Otto Spengler was 100% right. Have you ever seen anything like this? No foreign policy, afraid of pirates and runabouts when we have the most powerful military on Earth. I could go on and on. No one's getting tough on Gaddafi. The Middle East is burning. The U.S. is doing nothing. The U.S. couldn't even evacuate its citizens in the right manner. It's astounding. And what do we do here in America? Oscars. Oscars. We have Democrat congressmen putting on tiger uniforms. We have Oscars. We have an inexperienced, timid president. Timid, that is, with dictators, not timid with American patriots. It's astounding. Now Obama's offering states flexibility on health care law. He says that in public. In private, he tells liberals that his move will allow states to enact even more expensive reform. He's a liar. He's a total, incompetent, devious, communist liar. If we had a real opposition party, he would be impeached. I can name five things he could be impeached for. But what's the point? Who's going to listen to me? This is the Savage Nation, I do believe in. I'll tell you why. Because he went to bat for me. His name is Congressman Alan West. You know him, a military veteran, a real Iraq War veteran, retired as a lieutenant colonel. He did. Today, gold ended at a new record high over 1,400, sliding, all because of the rise in oil. It's directly, it's inversely proportional, as you well know. Gold futures closed at a record high, and silver futures advanced to a fresh three-decade high today as simmering tensions in the Middle East and North Africa, along with fears of inflation, drew investors to these metals. Gold for April delivery added $21 in a day, or 1.5% to close at $1,431 an ounce on the COMEX division of the New York Mercantile Exchange. Adam Klopfenstein, senior market strategist at Lynn Waldock in Chicago, said inflation-based gold trades are being made based on popular perceptions given higher energy and food prices, rather than Bernanke's view that the increased inflation from rising commodities prices will be modest and temporary. Nobody believes Bernanke anymore, okay? If you look at Tripoli, Gaddafi the murderer, Gaddafi the madman, is cracking down against anti-government protesters with machine guns, helicopters, and airplanes. And while and the government has successfully recaptured a key oil town, while Obama has done nothing, while Hillary has done nothing but shriek, it's a disgrace to live in a nation with such a powerful military that is so absolutely useless. What else is in the news? House passes funding bill aimed at avoiding a government shutdown. In other words, the government, the Republicans, lost their nerve again. They went back to the check pants Republicans they always were. I say shut it down. Shut it down. Go to michaelsavage.com and turn it on. Congressman calls for lifting of Britain's ban on Savage. Great article from WorldNet Daily. Nobody in the media has picked it up. Nobody other than Joe Farah of WorldNet Daily. Thank you, Joe. What's it about? We have one congressman, two now, who has appealed to Hillary Clinton to address UK's ban on Savage. Read about it. Emergency plea from me. I'm still banned in Britain. Please sign my petition. Now, please sign it. I need every vote. San Francisco earns its nickname. Obama serves governors a 2,200-calorie meal while telling you to eat carrots. Oman clashes, widened protest rumblings in Gulf. Ex-official says Lockerbie bomber blackmailed Gaddafi for release. I don't believe it. UN appeals to Hollywood for more warming propaganda. Guess who's evading Obamacare now? Christian groups. That's right, they're using my plan as spelled out in trickle-up poverty. Attention Christians. If you'd like to avoid Obamacare, read trickle-up poverty. I predicted this would happen. You want the roadmap? Go to my book, but don't blame me. North Korea threatens to start nuclear war. FBI files say that Ted Kennedy rented a brothel and sought to meet communists. No kidding. Top Dior designer who attacks Jews, says he loved Hitler, says to Jews they should have been gassed, has been fired by Dior. I guess it's safe to buy that Dior gown now. Car runs down bicycling demonstrators in Brazil. A motorist got crazy and went after a critical mass group of 100 pro-bicycle gangs. I call them bicycle gangs. Now, they shouldn't be hurt, of course, but I knew this would happen. People can only take so much from these scum. He rode into 100 of them, hit and injured 16. Evil, evil man. Madoff says the government is a Ponzi scheme. By the way, if you'd like to see what a wolf girl looks like, it's sad. An 11-year-old has been delighted after being named the world's hairiest girl. It's frightening, but it's a disease. It's called Ambras syndrome, known since the Middle Ages. Before the disease was understood, sufferers were branded werewolves. It's terrifying. Terrifying. All on michaelsavage.com.
Savage.
Living in the Bible, Isaiah said, and I will give children to be their princes, and babes shall rule over them. Now play the president. Tell me it doesn't fit.
Ladies and gentlemen, give it up for Motown.
That's all. And I will give children to be their princes, and babes shall rule over them. That's all. What more do you want? A babe is their master. As for my people, a babe is their master, and women rule over them. That's Isaiah 3.12. And I'm not a biblical guy. I just have a Bible with about 500 post-its in it. I think when I go to the across the river, you imagine when I can auction this off for with the Michael Savage's personal Bible with the post-its in it and the money goes to some scholarship fund? That would be a big thing on eBay. I get a lot of money for that one. There is nothing better for a man that he should eat and drink and make his soul enjoy pleasure for his labor. This also I saw that is from the hand of God. See, God tells you that. That's the thing about Jewishness. It's a lusty religion, number one, and it's also fundamentally connected to the body. This is something good about that. There's nothing better for a man than that he should eat and drink and make his soul enjoy pleasure for his labor. This also I saw that it is from the hand of God. For who will eat? Or who will enjoy if not I? This is again from Ecclesiastes. For to the man that is good in his, etc., you got the picture. Enjoy it, in other words. Then, of course, I could get into everything. There is a season and a time to every purpose under the heaven. Boy, if we're not living through times that are tumultuous, where people are terrified of the baby in the White House, or shall we say the babe in the White House, who sets the world on fire and then goes a-dancing. You want to play Turn by the Birds? Because that fits right here. You can sing along.
To die, time to plant, time to kill, time
whoa,
to heal.
Stop right there. A time to kill and a time to heal. We have to eliminate this. We have to burn the Bible. We have to take Ecclesiastes and set it afire. All good Americans are now to report to their local police station with the Bible and make certain that they throw it into the fire because it's so politically incorrect. It is so awful. It says this is a time to kill and a time to heal. That's not good. A time to love and a time to hate. Hating is bad. The children today are taught not to hit back. And that's why you can be stepped on by a third world nation that comes in here and steps on you and brainwashes your children. Play your turn again before I say something I regret. Go ahead.
A time to be born, a time to die, a time to plant, a time to reap, a time to kill.
Take a pill. Take a psychiatric med. Here it comes.
A time to build up, a time to break down, a time to dance, a time to mourn, a time to cast away stones.
Listen to this in a minute.
And time to
see what
where I'm going.
A time of love, a time of hate, a time of war, a time of peace.
Okay, let's stop right there. A time to love, a time to hate, a time for war, and a time for peace. We're at war, and we have a babe running America. We have nation after nation declaring war on us. We have one nation after another spitting on us. We have a Navy turned into a diversity training vehicle. We have an Air Force that's been grounded. We have a military that's been told to take gay training on the battlefield. And we have a man celebrating Motown while all this is going on. Ladies and gentlemen, do you have any idea what I'm saying to you? I hope you do. I really hope you do, because I don't know whether we can survive two more years of this. And I tell you again, maybe this is the question of the day. Let's stumble right into the question of the day on the Savage Nation. Many of you don't want to get too agitated. Many of you, though, are very agitated seeing the world on fire. People cannot believe this man set the world on fire, and now he's dancing to Motown. And make no mistake about it, this is not a spontaneous revolution going on in the Arab world. Oh, no. Oh, no. The evidence is quite clear. As I put together in a 16-page essay, which I posted on Michael Savage 2 weeks ago when Egypt was burning, it was Jimmy Carter. First of all, I think it goes back to George Soros. That's the best I could figure out, because he has a group that he put together, which includes Zygmunt Brzezinski, okay? Zygmunt Brzezinski, you know who that character is, the former national security advisor under James Carter, the peanut farmer. So you have the Soros, Brzezinski, Carter, Obama connection, and now you have the Middle East on fire. Now, did they do it because they want to see the world burn? I doubt it. Couple of reasons they did it. They did it because, A, profit. They want to make sure they can make money going up and going down. Someone's making money off this. You make no mistake about it. Just as I was right about the cause of the financial collapse, it came out 2 weeks ago, the so-called commission. It told you it was orchestrated. The SEC looked the other day. We looked the other way. We just heard the other day that the head of the ACC, the top lawyer, took a job in one of the major law firms. The very same SEC lawyer just made $1.2 million in profits, which is chicken feed compared to what was really made, while this was going on, off his mother's Madoff fund. So the point they're making is the Bush administration was just as complicit in the meltdown, and it was, in my opinion, the man who really should have been indicted by now and investigated. We have no reason to prove that he did this, but he should be investigated simply because he was the head of the SEC at the time, Chris Cox. You don't hear from him. Where is he? Republican, golden-haired boy appointed by Bush, was running the SEC. He did nothing while all of this went on. At the very least, it's incompetence, something, responsibility, no. And then you got Hank Paulson, Treasury Secretary, had come over from Goldman Sachs. Again, no investigation, nothing, zero. So people made billions of dollars off the collapse. They milked you of your 401k, melted down companies, destroyed corporations, destroyed the economy in order to panic you into voting for this unknown named Obama, because you figured he's hopeful and he's going to be different than the corrupt white men. Let's be clear, okay? That was like chalk on a blackboard, what I just said to you. It was like, oh, God, he's right. That was the scam. What, do you think they're stupid? Okay, run this guy. He looks, okay, looks good, Harvard. Harvard Law, we don't know anything about him. We don't know what he went, where he went, whatever. We're born, that doesn't matter. Where he's born, doesn't matter. He looks clean cut, and he looks like he could do the job, and he's not one of those evil, corrupt white men. So we thought, here he is, boom, more corrupt, more incompetent than ever. More corruption, more incompetence than ever. More extra legal maneuvers than ever. More power grabs than ever. And he's getting down with Motown, that's all. So here we are. Now we have the next major league event going on right in front of our eyes. I was right. What I'm saying to you is I called it like it is in trickle-up poverty. I spent chapters on it explaining how I thought that the meltdown occurred. I named names. I named the Managed Funds Association. I talked about the hedge fund operators who I think did this, none of whom have been indicted, by the way, by our esteemed federal government. So now I'm telling you what I think, one man's opinion, is going on in the Middle East. Don't you want my opinion? Isn't that why you listen to the show every day? It's not to laugh. Sure, you want to laugh, but you also want an informed opinion. I gave you my informed opinion. This was orchestrated by that group that I just told you for their socialist reasons. They want a worldwide socialist, one world government. And they got to break it. They need, in order to make an omelet, you got to break a few eggs. In this case, the eggs are, name them. Okay, Egypt, Libya, whoever goes next. That's part of their Marxian omelet. The one thorn in their side, as named by George Soros, is Israel. He said they're the main problem in the Middle East. George Soros, allegedly of Jewish ancestry, allegedly a Holocaust survivor, was blaming Israel as a thorn in the side of peace in the Middle East. George Soros said that, not me. So who's the anti-Semite? That's what you got to ask your question. Everyone's afraid of the word. I'm not afraid of it because I know who I am and I know who they are. And so therefore, I'm going to tell you how I see it. So, A, they're doing it to make a new world order out of the world. That's number one. And number two, they're making a little money on the side. It's like the missionaries, it was said, went to Hawaii in the early 1850, 60 era. And they said the missionaries went there to do good, and they did very well indeed. That's what Hawaiian people would say to you with a joke. What do they mean by that? The missionaries went there to do good. They gave the mumbo jumbo to the Hawaiians. Took them away from their false idols, introduced Christianity, and the side took a little land here and there, a couple like all the islands. That's all. It did good and did very well indeed. See, you have it both ways that way. These good liberals want to do good in the world, and they're doing very well indeed. Now, can we prove it? Can we actually prove that someone made money on the Egyptian currency just before betting against it? And then they made more when they knew it would end immediately and the Egyptian currency would be back in power again. When they knew the banks would reopen, they would just happen to, you know, sell long at that time. No, we can't prove that yet. In fact, you can never prove it because we have a corrupt SEC.
Savage.
The problem between the unions and the state of Wisconsin are not going to end soon. Joining us now with one man's look into this is columnist Jack Hunter.
Well, good to be with you as always, Michael. Of course, we've all been watching the situation out there in Wisconsin, where you basically have, of course, the labor unions and assorted liberal groups raising holy hell at Governor Scott Walker. The governor's absolutely right. Wisconsin has an unsustainable economic situation right there, like a lot of states in this country. They're completely in debt. He's trying to address it, do something about it, and getting a lot of pushback from people who are used to the same old, the labor unions and the other liberals out they're organizing, who don't seem to understand that we have an unsustainable economic situation, that it is not now like it was 10, 20, 30 years ago, where they could have these big pensions and big benefits packages and that state governments can afford this. The reason I bring this up, this is part of a willful ignorance that we always see from the left, and even staring in the face of stark economic realities like the fact that we don't have any more money, they don't want to believe it, they are not willing to consider it, and they just want the same old in perpetuity, apparently. That's what we're seeing in Wisconsin. And also, dare I say, when Senator Rand Paul, who's sort of a champion of the Tea Party, appeared on David Letterman last week, we saw the same sort of willful ignorance on the part of the liberal late-night talk host.
Why do you say that?
Well, Senator Rand Paul has been outspoken about cutting spending, $500 billion in spending cuts. He was brought to office by the Tea Party and so on and so on, appeared on David Letterman's show last week. And what was interesting about it, as it relates to the Wisconsin situation, when Paul started talking with David Letterman about the Wisconsin situation, Rand was pretty much making the point that you or I or all the conservatives are making, that, you know, Wisconsin, like any other state, is in a heap of trouble. We don't have this kind of money anymore. And Paul sort of agreed with Scott Walker, and understandably so. But long story short, David Letterman actually told Rand Paul that, no, the rich need to pay more taxes. That's how Wisconsin can get out of its situation. That, you know, the teachers' unions, if we only paid them more money, Senator Paul pointed out that the teachers, on average, some of them make about $80,000 a year, which is a very attractive package. And David Letterman said, well, we need to pay them double that amount. The reason I bring this up is because at one point, David Letterman actually said, and this is a quote, you know, I think he's wrong about some of these things. I just can't tell you why. That's what Letterman said about Senator Paul. Ignoring the fact that Senator Paul is absolutely right when he notes that, oh, I don't know, the top 1% of income tax earners pay one-third of all the income taxes. The top 50% pay like 96% of all the taxes. It's crazy to say we can just loot the rich some more, which is basically what Letterman thought we should do.
You can't be serious.
It's completely ridiculous, as Letterman seemed to say, by doubling the teachers' salaries, who are already making $80,000 a year out there in Wisconsin. It's ridiculous to say we should pay them more, that that's what's wrong with education, when we already pay about something like $20,000 per student through federal dollars in education. Obviously, the problem with our education system is not money.
Exactly.
And it's interesting that despite all these facts, you know, basically if you're a liberal, you think in this sort of class warfare mentality. You think of everything as class envy, that the only reason we're in this situation is the rich is sort of screwing the middle guy and screwing the middle class, and it has nothing to do with basic economics, that we're spending money we don't have, that the unions are sort of sucking the system dry with these huge benefits packages and everything they're being given, as we see in Wisconsin. That's sort of the point Senator Paul was trying to make to David Letterman. But his attitude, saying, well, I think Rand Paul is wrong, though I can't tell you why, is indicative of how liberals think. We're seeing it in Wisconsin. You saw it during Senator Paul's appearance on David Letterman. And it is how they think across the board. And this is something we're going to have to overcome. They have to realize that you have to look at the economic situation we find ourselves in, assess it, and make adjustments. That's what grown-ups do. That's what we as conservatives are insisting we must do. Governor Scott Walker is absolutely right for not backing down one iota, and that liberals think, well, no, things can just go on indefinitely like they've always been, that we could keep affording all this stuff, is completely insane, no matter how wedded they are to the sort of class warfare narrative.
Oh, I agree.
The interesting thing about the appearance on David Letterman with Rand Paul, the Wall Street Journal called it, quote, a painful 12 minutes. And I think that's a fair assessment. And, you know, as the Wall Street Journal pointed out, it was more painful for Letterman, you know, who was admitting his willful ignorance and was sort of, you know, admitting that he didn't know what he was talking about when it came to these economic issues, but saying he was still right. It shows you how wedded the left is to that narrative. And it was indeed painful to watch as, you know, Senator Paul, who was fairly calm and measured, tried to explain to an antagonistic late-night talk show host that our current economic woes had much more to do with an unaccountable and overly expensive public sector than an undertaxed private sector. The idea that we are going to ask the rich, quote-unquote, to pay more taxes and that'll get us out of this hole is completely ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
It was, to quote the Wall Street Journal, painful to watch this seasoned talk show host basically get schooled by a rookie senator on how the supposedly evil rich actually do pay most of the taxes, how education remains in the dumps despite having abundant funding. They have more money than they could possibly, you know, hope for. And how, quite frankly, marketplace competition is continuously stymied by continuous government subsidizing of sort of the complacent and incompetent behavior of the public sector. That's what we're seeing in Wisconsin. That's what Senator Paul was trying to explain to David Letterman. But liberals can't wrap their head around that. It is a big problem because they're going to have to wrap their head around that, or we're going to turn into Greece or Ireland or these countries over there who are suffering from an unsustainable economic system that finally collapsed. The United States is a lot bigger than those countries. Our economy is more tied in globally with a lot of what's going on around the world, and it'll be a much bigger problem. And quite frankly, the people who are getting in the way of stopping us from solving these problems, whether at the federal level with what Obama and the Democrats are doing up there, or Wisconsin, a microcosm of our problems, is the liberals. They are standing in the way of us having a more rational and common sense economic policy in this country.
Well, of course.
And to show you how far and widespread that sort of liberal mentality is, you know, when Letterman admitted what I've been calling, and accurately so, his willful ignorance, saying, well, I don't know why Senator DePaul is wrong on these economic matters, but he just must be, a certain portion of his audience applauded. And Letterman, to his credit, being a funny guy, obviously, said, well, thank you for applauding my stupidity. But that shows that a significant part of the population agrees with that mentality. We know that. We see it out there in the streets of Wisconsin with the people protesting. And that's a hell of a thing to try to get around. You know, you would think if you presented them with the demonstrable facts that the rich do pay more in taxes, and that, quite frankly, they should even have to, that, you know, we've given enough money to education, that we can't sustain this economic system, that if you show them these things, that they would sort of look at it and sort of reconsider their position. But that's not the way it works with left-wing ideologues. They're not going to do that. They will go down with the sinking ship if that's what it takes. They don't care how much money we spend or what we have to do, if we have to print more money at the Federal Reserve, if we have to borrow from China from here to Timbuktu or to the cows come home, they don't mind doing that one bit, even if it is our destruction. And that's a sad thing to say, and very scary, quite frankly, that the left thinks that way.
Well, it's the only argument they know.
Well, you know, Michael, with the Tea Party and everything that's going on nationally, and I include Wisconsin in that mix, because Wisconsin really is a microcosm of what's going on nationally up there in Washington, D.C., with the budget deficits and the spending and, of course, raising the debt ceiling. Everybody's talking about that. This is a dire situation. This isn't being alarmist to say this. This isn't being, you know, screaming fire in a crowded theater. No, this is very real. The economic situation we face, we are literally asking our children and grandchildren to take on an immoral, quite frankly, amount of debt that we would, you know, in any other situation, never ask anybody else to assume, quite frankly. The situation in Wisconsin, I see a bunch of spoiled brats who've had it too good for too long, who are protesting a very reasonable governor in Scott Walker. He's doing exactly the right thing. What we see up there on Capitol Hill with senators like Rand Paul and other members of the Tea Party who are trying to get a hold on this thing. I think Senator Paul proposed $500 billion in spending cuts. That's a good start. Not this sort of measly, you know, $60 to $100 billion. The Republicans keep talking about that, and they can't even get that done. That's just not good enough. But the situation, the stakes are high, and we're going to have to do something about this, be hard-headed about it, and sort of either ignore or defeat the liberals the best that we can.
Thanks for the report, Jack.
Well, as I said, the stakes are high, and I think we can get things done. They're certainly turning in our direction. The Tea Party is certainly encouraging. I think more Americans than ever are waking up, even those who might have voted for Barack Obama. They were just so disgusted with George W. Bush, and understandably so, are sort of fearing what Obama and the Democrats are doing in the direction this country is heading in, and rightfully so. Well, I must mention that not only did I think the situation with Senator Rand Paul appearing on David Letterman's show was instructive to how liberals think, sort of Letterman's willful ignorance, in full disclosure, I was happy and it was an honor to assist Senator Rand Paul with his new book, The Tea Party Goes to Washington. I was glad to take part in that and help him with that book. But The Tea Party Washington is on bookstands now. I encourage your listeners to go out and check it out. We can talk more about how to get rid of this massive debt and spending. It's certainly in the book. And as always, I encourage your listeners to visit SouthernAvenger.com. Thanks for having me on, Michael.
I'll be right back. It's the Savage Nation.
Savage.
The Bible's a very complicated book. It's not just about resisting temptation. There are a lot of prohibitions in the Bible, particularly for religious Jews who can't eat certain foods, certain kosher foods you can eat, non-kosher foods you can't eat, certain animals you can eat, certain animals you can't eat. It's extremely complicated. I don't know if you people know it. The average person, if they're at all religious, tries to follow the Ten Commandments, which unto itself is very hard when you consider what's in there. The Orthodox Jew has to follow 313 commandments or 330-some-odd commandments. Who can do all of that? Who can remember all of that? And so you look at the religion of Islam, and the Muslim has many of the same prohibitions as the Orthodox Jew does. So I'll make it simple. For example, the Orthodox Jew won't eat pork or pig, and the Muslim won't eat pork or pig. Why? Because if you look at Leviticus 11, there's a whole list of foods you can, animals you can eat and animals you can't eat. I can't read every one of them, but it runs for two pages. Can you believe it? These are the living things which you may eat among all the beasts that are on the earth. Whatsoever parteth the hoof, and is wholly cloven-footed, and cheweth the cud, you can eat. Nevertheless, these you should not eat, of them that only chew the cud, or of them that only part the hoof. The camel you can't eat, because he cheweth the cud, and but parteth not the hoof. He is unclean unto you. Now, why would the Bible, why would the ancient Israelites be told not to eat the camel? Well, would you eat your Chevy Tahoe? It was transportation. I mean, you could argue that the rules were written some ways to avoid eating your transportation, if you wanted to be sarcastic. But it gets more complicated, because the next one says, and the rock badger you can't eat, because he cheweth the cud, but parteth not the hoof. He is unclean unto you. So what's the prohibition on a rock badger? What do they care about a rock badger to keep it alive? Then it says you can't even eat a rabbit. Why couldn't the ancient Jew eat the rabbit? It says, and the hare, because she cheweth the cud, but parteth not the hoof. She is unclean unto you. Well, the Italians eat the hare, And the swine, because he parteth the hoof and is cloven-footed, but cheweth not the cud, he is unclean to you. Of their flesh you should not eat, and their carcasses you should not touch. They are unclean unto you. Then what about in the fish in the water? Jews can't eat shrimp. Jews can't eat. You wouldn't know that, of course, going to a smorgasbord in Florida. Jews can't eat shrimp or lobster. Go tell them that down in Boca Raton. These may eat all that are in the waters whatsoever has fins and scales in the season and the rivers you can eat. But all have not fins and scales in the season and the rivers and all the swarm in the waters and of all the living creatures that are in the waters, they are a detestable thing unto you. And they shall be a detestable thing unto you, shall not eat of their flesh, and their carcasses you shall have in detestation. Whatever has no fins nor scales in the waters, that is a detestable thing unto you. Right? And what about in the air? And these you shall have in detestation among the fowls. They shall not be eaten. They are a detestable thing. The great vulture, so you can't eat vulture. The bearded vulture, the osprey, the kite, the falcon, the raven, the ostrich, the nighthawk, the seamew, the hawk, the little owl, and the cormorant, and the great owl, and the horned owl, and the pelican, and the carrion vulture, and the stork, and the heron, and the hoopoe, and the bat. You can't eat them. I don't know why. What about creatures that crawl on the ground? All winged swarming things that go upon all fours are a detestable thing unto you. And he lists the ones, or they list the ones you can eat. But listen to what you can eat. You don't even know this. Attention, Orthodox Jews. Even these of them you may eat, the locust after its kinds, and the bald locust, and the cricket, and the grasshopper. So you're allowed to actually have a grasshopper stew if you're a Jewish person. Or if you really want to go into the Bible, you can have a little locust dessert, a little locust ice cream. Why? Well, it's very interesting because when I studied nutrition, I found out that not only were these great famine foods, grasshoppers are very high in protein, incidentally. The poor Africans, after living in drought, sometimes they have nothing to eat but the locust and the grasshopper, and it keeps them alive. It's a very high source of protein. But all winged swarming things which have 4 feet are a detestable thing unto you. And they go in to the whole deal. You can't eat carrion. You right? And whatsoever goes on its paws among all beasts that go on all fours, that they are unclean unto you. Whoso touch their carcass shall be unclean unto them. And he that beareth the carcass of them shall wash his clothes. Blah, blah, blah. So you go on to the whole thing. I'm not going to read all of it. It's very interesting stuff. It's long. It's long stuff. And then it gets down to the swarming thing. You can't eat them. You cannot eat liberals because it says, whatsoever goeth upon the belly, and whatsoever goeth upon all fours, and whatsoever hath many feet, even all swarming things that swarm upon the earth, them ye shall not eat. So you can't eat any liberals, I'm sorry, for they are a detestable thing. You should not make yourself... You shall not make yourself detestable with any swarming thing that swarmeth, neither shall you make. So you see what I'm getting at? It's very complicated. This is the law of the beast and of the fowl and of every living creature that moveth in the waters and of every creature that swarmeth upon the earth to make a difference between the unclean and the clean and between the living thing that may be eaten and the living thing that may not be eaten. Let's close the book, and now let's use common sense. Because I've talked about this with people for years. So you say, well, you can understand why the ancients wouldn't eat pig because they saw they were a dirty animal. The pig rolled in mud. The pig ate fecal matter. And they said it's ugly, disgusting, blah, blah, blah. So they didn't eat the pig. Then there was no refrigeration. There was no preservation. And they probably saw that some people who ate pig, the heathens, would get sick and die of trichinosis. So they said, don't eat the pig. All right, so you understand that one. That's commonsensical. But what about all the other animals? What sense does it make not to eat all of these other animals, whether it be a snake when you're starving to death, which, by the way, you can eat snake meat and live quite well on it? Why would that be in there? Who would have written that? Is that the word of God? Or is that the word of man? And so if it's only the word of man, then you what? The whole Bible is only the word of man? The ancient Israelites, you could argue, were simply trying to hoodwink the dummies in order to keep them under control because they were a proud people and a stiff-necked people and didn't listen to anybody. So he said, hey, man, I saw a bush burn over there, and God came down. He's going to punish you unless... And so he waved a rattle, and he scared everybody, and that's how the whole thing started. You could look at it that way if you want. I mean, you could say it's all shamanism. I'm not going to tell you what to think. I'm not here to convert you or sell you or tell you you're great or not great. To me, religion is just exactly that. It's what you believe in. It's your business, not mine. But take a look at what's going on the earth right now with radical Muslims who don't see the world that way. These fanatics would burn down every library on earth because they would take us back to the 8th century when they burnt the Alexandria Library when they invaded Egypt. And they burnt all the books in the Alexandria Library because to them, there was only one book on earth and that was the Quran. So they wiped out all of the learning that had been advanced in Egypt. These are the dangerous winds that we are facing on the earth today. Some of us know it. Some of us don't know it. Educated Muslims know it better than you know it. You understand what I'm saying to you? Don't assume they don't know what threats there are. The king of Saudi Arabia knows it. He knows very well he is threatened by these fanatics who would burn his kingdom to the ground if they could, which is why the kingdom of Saudi Arabia, right now, the leaders are shaking in their tents praying to God that Israel does the work that they should be doing against Iran.
Savage.